This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Is North Korea's leader looking for sanctions relief? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. It's official. North Korea's leader made an unofficial visit to Beijing this week. Kim Jong-un said he's open to denuclearization and to a series of historic summits with South Korea and the U.S. With China having signed up to tighter sanctions against North Korea in recent months, was he also seeking an economic reprieve? The BBC's Asia-Pacific editor is Celia Hatton.
China basically dominates the North Korean economy, and especially with sanctions in place, North Korea's ties to other economies have been largely cut, and so that makes China really more a key player than ever before. It's been interesting to watch China uphold UN sanctions. They've stopped imports of North Korean coal. They've stopped imports of North Korean seafood. So some of the key things that the North Korean regime really relied upon to bring in foreign currency have been withheld by the Chinese.
So what do you think they will have mostly been talking about? Obviously, these upcoming summits, but do you think loosening the sanctions, do you think that will have been part of the discussions?
I think we've been getting the message that the sanctions are really starting to bite into the North Korean economy. It's really starting to affect the elites in North Korea, and that really scares the North Korean leadership because they want to keep that top tier of people really happy. We have to remember, these are two men who've never met each other before. Can they build some kind of personal rapport, some kind of personal trust? Because at the end of the day, Beijing and Pyongyang really need each other to some extent. Pyongyang needs the backing of Beijing. If talks fail with South Korea or the United States, it wants to be able to keep China as a protector. And of course, China wants North Korea to remain a relatively happy neighbor. Both sides have an interest in trying to create some relationship that really has failed in the past few years.
North Korea's future relationship with the world, the success of these upcoming summits really depends, doesn't it, on the idea of, quote, denuclearization. Does North Korea mean the same thing by that as, say, the U.S.?
No, absolutely not. North Korea has made promise to denuclearize, but it has continually pushed forward with its nuclear program. Even the language coming from Kim Jong-un out of Beijing said, yes, we are interested in denuclearization if South Korea and the United States respond to our efforts with goodwill. So there's a lot of ifs, there's a lot of caveats and conditions. So really, we're not looking at any major change in stance from North Korea.
Celia Hatton, let's do the numbers. A tech sell-off on Wall Street is spilling over to global stocks. Investors are worried about tighter regulations as data protection concerns around Facebook and Cambridge Analytica swirl. Markets are also keeping an eye on reports that China will enact retaliatory tariffs against the U.S. in response to Donald Trump's plans for tariffs on Chinese goods. Well, the head of the World Trade Organization certainly thinks that as a result of that, we're seeing the first signs of movement towards a trade war. Roberto Acevedo was speaking to the BBC's Stephen Sacker.
It's a big problem. I have been saying this for quite some time. It is a big problem. I don't think anybody believes that this is something minor, even in the U.S. administration. And the reality is that these conversations are now ongoing precisely because people are beginning to understand, I hope, how serious this is and the kind of impact that this could have to the global economy.
So we're in a global trade war, aren't we?
Well, I don't think we're there yet, but we are seeing the first movements towards it.
What more will it take for you to declare
the measures and countermeasures are not in place to begin with. There are still conversations ongoing. There are still negotiations ongoing. You don't want to be in the war. We want to avoid the war.
Roberto Acevedo.
From Swiss watches to Italian sports cars, the most well-known luxury brands tend to be European. Increasingly, more African brands are making their mark. The BBC's Ijoma Ndukwe reports.
I've just arrived at the Van Lelle's Diamond Store. It's on New Bond Street, right in the heart of the fine jewellery district.
Van Lelle's?
Oh, hello, Vanya, it's Ijoma.
Oh, please come up.
Vanya Lelas, the gemologist behind the brand, welcomes me into the showroom. Born and raised in Guinea-Bissau, Vanya says her heritage inspires her collection and drives her desire to place the brand's African roots at the heart of its identity.
Everything that is used in fine jewellery, probably 80-90% comes from Africa. The industry has been bombarded with Colombian emeralds, Burma rubies, and everybody is so proud that auction houses, oh, this is a Colombian emerald. Zambian emeralds are as beautiful, as precious as Colombian emeralds.
Over at iconic department store Harrods, Ozohu Addo describes one of the best sellers from their Para skincare range. She launched the brand last year, creating products that blend African botanical ingredients like marula oil, shea butter and moringa.
It's been a wave, actually, of people really sort of discovering the quality and the value of African botanicals.
So what's your biggest market for the brand?
Well, apart from London here, quite a number of the African diaspora and community. Also, Nigeria is another very key market for us.
At London's St Pancras station, I meet Uche Pissar, who runs London and Paris-based brand management consultancy Lux Corp.
The luxury market has changed. The consumers have changed. They have become very informed because of social media and digital media. And I think African luxury brands are beginning to understand the dynamics of luxury and how to take advantage of this new access point for visibility.
It's not so apparent here in Mayfair. But I wonder, how soon could we start to see heritage brands from Africa on shopping streets like this, alongside some of the largest luxury powerhouses?
Ijoma Ndukwe reporting. Finally, an Italian man has been acquitted of stealing an eggplant 9 years and nearly $10,000 in court costs later. Italy's highest appeals court said the man was just trying to feed his family. So maybe this time, justice was a little too blind. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.